Hi there. My name is Liz Dawn, and I am the CEO and co-founder of Mishka Productions and Celebrate Your Life Events. I just want to thank you so much for your support and offer you this fantastic free gift of Dr. Joe Dispenza presenting a workshop at one of our Celebrate Your Life events. This was recorded live, and I think you're just going to love it. It is truly a game changer. So sit back and enjoy, and I hope to see you at one of our either online programs or live event programs, and please stay in touch with us at www.celebrateyourlife.com.
Good afternoon. I want you to turn to the person next to you. I want you to look them in the eye, and I want you to introduce yourself as a genius of the universe, please. Now, geniuses, many of you came to this wonderful event for 2 or 3 days to retreat from your life and to remember what you already know. Wouldn't you agree? And wouldn't you agree that all of this knowledge that you learn is to inspire you to see possibilities that you may have not seen before? Yes? Now here's the fundamental question. What are you going to do with all this knowledge? You're going to just, learn a bit of information, and the research shows that every time you learn something new, you make a new connection in your brain. That's what learning is. Learning is forging new synaptic connections. Remembering is maintaining and sustaining those connections. And the Nobel Prize laureate, Kandel, in the year 2000, found that when people learn just a few bits of information, they double the amount of connections in their brain from 1,300 to 2,600. But if they didn't revisit that information, if they didn't review it, and if they didn't apply it, those connections broke apart. Disappeared. The physical changes that were in the brain from their interaction in the environment withered away. So knowledge without experience is called philosophy. Yes? You know a few philosophers in your life? My staff gave me these cards for Christmas. They just say, stop talking. And then you have experience without knowledge, which is called ignorance. But if you take philosophical, intellectual, theoretical knowledge, and you're inspired by it, and it moves you some way to come out of your resting state, and you apply that knowledge in some way, and you modify your behaviors and do something different, and you get your behaviors to match your intentions, and your actions equal to your thoughts, and your mind and body working together, hang on, you're going to run into a new experience. Would you agree? And that new experience is going to enrich the circuits in your brain that you understood philosophically. You still with me? And then once those circuits, those gangs of neurons begin to organize themselves into networks, then the brain releases a chemical. And that chemical is called a feeling or an emotion. And then you begin to embody knowledge. And there is physical changes from a genetic standpoint when a new emotion is created from a new experience. How many people are with me? So then we're talking about pushing away from the dinner table, dinner conversation, and actually doing something with this information. And then it's not enough to do it once. You have to be able to replicate that experience. You got to make it happen natural and easy and automatic and second nature. It's got to become innate in you. It's got to become who you are. And when you take that state of being where you arrived at a place where you've memorized an internal neurochemical order that no person, no condition, no circumstance in your external environment can remove you from it, you are mastering that philosophy. How many people are with me? So you go from philosopher to initiate, to master. How many people understand? Now, I want you to turn to the person next to you, and I want you to have a robust conversation about that for a minute, because I am not going to allow you to leave this day today without you thinking about what you're going to do with all this information. Come on, geniuses, turn to someone next to you and tell them, wire it in there. Now, geniuses, hello, hi. So then, this is a time in history where it's not enough to know. This is a time in history to know how. And I've traveled the world enough now to understand that there's an awakening going on with common people like you and I that are fed up with the illusions and the lies, and they want to understand the truth, and they want to begin to experience it. And those are the people that I want to hang out with. Because when you really are pushed to the limit in your life, do you know when you're pushed to the edge, you know what everybody does? They retreat from their life. They don't want to see anybody. They don't want to talk to anybody. They break their social engagements, and they begin to observe how they've been for the last period of time. You with me? And they begin to select a new ideal, a new possibility, a new potential in the quantum field. And they begin to obsess about that possibility. And with all of their attention and their intention, they're falling in love with a vision. Now, you would call that prayer for some people, because what is prayer? Prayer is what? Believing in thought more than anything else, is it not? And so what they're doing is they're making a choice to be defined by their future instead of their past. Now, here's the problem. You and I wait for crisis or trauma or disease or diagnosis or loss. We need to go to our lowest denominator before we decide to change. You with me? My message is, why wait? You know, you can learn and change in a state of pain and suffering, or you can learn and change in a state of joy and inspiration. Which would you choose? And you know when you're changing? You want to know when you're changing? When you stop talking about it. Isn't that true? You're too busy being it. If you're talking about it, you're standing on the cliff, looking down at the water and trying to decide how cold it's going to be when you jump in. But the people who actually take the leap, that really say, if the quantum model of reality is correct, that somehow the way I think and the way I feel has an effect on my life, maybe I should take time out of my busy day and try it out. You know what I mean? I mean, the hardest part of all of this is making the time for your precious self to do it. And the people who make time to begin to interact with the unseen and begin to emulate the creator by becoming the creator, to observe a new destiny, they're not doing it as their victimized, guilty, unworthy self. When they're creating, they are emulating the creator. They are loving intelligence and intelligent love. They're in a state of gratitude. They're in an elevated emotion and a clear intention. And it's those two ingredients that begin to affect matter. You with me? So when you return back to your life, your brain is going to start thinking about everything you've learned. And you're going to begin to review it, and you're going to contemplate on it, and you're going to speculate possibilities. And as you begin to review that information, you're wiring that information neurologically in your brain. Why do you think I make you turn to someone and say something? Because the moment you start talking about it, you're firing and wiring those circuits in your brain, and you're installing the neurological hardware so that in your weakest moment or your darkest hour, you don't talk yourself out of possibility. You with me? So then, you could read the book on forgiveness and unconditional love, and you could come to the Celebrate Your Life event, and you could hear the speakers, and you could walk in a state of grace for the weekend out of your external environment. And then you walk into your life now. In your life is your initiation. There are no schools of ancient wisdom in the Himalayas that you have to trek to. Your life is your school. It's your initiation to challenge you to greater states of being. And what piece of knowledge or information, what philosophy can I apply to this adversity? How do I have to change to meet it from a greater level of mind for a new experience? And that new experience enriches the circuits in your brain, and then you begin to feel differently. And if you can replicate it then over and over again, you change. That's called transformation. You change form. You with me? So you read all these books and you come to the Celebrate Your Life and you get the companion CDs and whoa, you drive it in your car. Oh my God, this is incredible. And then you walk into work and you're like, hey, you need to forgive over there. That's your problem. Hey, and you over there, open your heart a little bit, huh? And then you find yourself repeating the lines perfectly. And then people are knocking on your door at work. Would you be willing to administer to me today? Can you solve the problems of my life? Don't you know that no new information can come into your brain and body that isn't equal to the emotion that you're experiencing? That's why I don't answer questions. Why would I answer a question for a person who's suffering? They can't hear it because they could only hear the thoughts equal to how they feel. How many people are with me? Get a person out of their resting state and they feel inspired or they see possibility and those words sink in. So then now everything's going really well, you know, because everybody's coming to you and you're thinking maybe I'm going to get a promotion because I'm really, you know, wielding the sword over here. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get a call from your spouse or your partner and they tell you that it's your mother-in-law's birthday and that you forgot. And you just stop whatever you're doing. You sit down on the couch and you say, I hate my mother-in-law. She hurt my feelings 15 years ago. And I hate when she chews her food and she tells the same stories. I can't take her. And you get in the shower and you're washing your hair and you're thinking, oh my God, I don't want to go to this dinner. And all of a sudden, you pause for a minute and you're like, oh, I went to the Celebrate Your Life conference. Damn it. Now I got to do something with all of this. And get out of the shower, you dry yourself off, and you begin to think about what you've been thinking about. You begin to pay attention to how you're reacting and behaving. You begin to notice how you're feeling. And that concept in neuroscience is called metacognition. They call it mindfulness. But the fact that we have this huge frontal lobe, it allows us to observe who we're being. Now think about this. If 95% of who you are, geniuses, by the time you're 35 years old, is a set of memorized behaviors and emotional reactions, beliefs and perceptions and attitudes that function like a subconscious computer program. You're unconscious most of the time. You're habituated. If that's who you are 95% of the time, would you agree then that the moment you're observing those automatic thoughts, the moment you're paying attention to those knee-jerk reactions, the moment you are noticing how you're feeling, it means now you're no longer the program, but now you're a consciousness observing the program. How many people are with me? Now, by the way, that's who you really are. And that's what consciousness is. It's an awareness. It's paying attention. It's noticing. So then in order for you to change, you have to observe yourself in your old state of being. Would you agree? So if you were dancing the merengue, right? And then you saw yourself dancing the merengue and you thought, oh my God, I thought I was so good when I was doing it. And then you saw yourself dance the merengue, would you agree that you would self-correct? Yes. Quickly, huh? If you were giving a lecture or a speech to your fellow employees and they videotaped that and you saw yourself rubbing your nose every 15 seconds or scratching the back of your head, you would, no one else would notice it, but you'd be like, what am I doing? You would become conscious of your unconscious self. Would you agree with that? Yes. So then the first step in change is that we have to observe our old state of being. Now, nobody likes to light a match in a dark place. But when you begin to observe the old self, it means now you are no longer the old self, but you're the consciousness observing the old self, and you begin to objectify your subjective self. Does that make sense? You begin to see through the eyes of someone else who you've been. Isn't that cool? Now, once you decide who you no longer want to be, the brain does something very natural. It starts to think about who it does want to be. It starts to plan its behaviors. It starts speculating possibilities. It thinks about experiences it wants to have, choices it's going to make, thoughts that they do want to inspire themselves with, and they begin to feel differently. And so that person that was going to mother-in-law's birthday party begins to observe his thoughts or her thoughts or behaviors and her emotions. And by observing it, nerve cells that no longer fire together, you begin to silence the circuits in your brain that are connected to the old self. And just like any relationship, nerve cells are the same way. If they don't communicate, they break apart. There's physical change. Those circuits come unglued. And so he starts to think, or she starts to think, oh my God, what did I learn in that lecture on Saturday afternoon? Oh, unconditional love. See myself in her. Oh my God, I have to do that today? Yuck. Stay in the present moment. Open your heart. And as you begin to review all of those different things you learn, you begin to activate those circuits in the brain. And as you begin to cause the brain to fire in new sequences and new patterns and new combinations, anytime you make your brain work differently, you're creating a new level of mind. Why? Mind is the brain in action. Mind is the brain at work. So as you remind yourself of who you no longer want to be, and you remind yourself of who you do want to be, there's physical changes that take place in your brain. And as you review it enough times, something magical happens. And most people don't even notice this. They begin to put themselves into the equation. They begin to take that knowledge and they begin to mix it with them acting on that knowledge. And the research shows that the moment you begin to rehearse mentally what you're doing, if you're doing it truly in a focused state, your brain does not know the difference between the outer world and the inner world, and the brain looks like it's already had the experience. So you begin to install the neurological circuitry ahead of the actual event. How many people are with me? So you're priming your brain now, and you're installing those hardware programs, and the hardware program, the more you review it, becomes a software program, becomes more automatic. So then, you get in the car, you're going to the dinner, and you're thinking, okay, see myself and her, I'm not going to lose my cool, I'm going to stay present, I'm not going to judge, you know, you go through this whole thing. No judgy, you know. And then you get there, and you get your behaviors to match your intentions. You get your actions equal to your thoughts, you get your mind and body working together, you change something about you. You make a different choice, and all of a sudden, your heart opens, and you feel love, and you feel compassion. The moment you feel that emotion, then you are teaching your body emotionally to understand what your mind is intellectually understood. So knowledge is for the mind and experience is for the body, and you are embodying knowledge, and you begin to signal new genes in new ways, and your body begins to rewrite those programs. How many people are with me? But you can't forgive your mother-in-law and love her one time and expect to be in the stained glass windows at church. You know, that's not going to work. You've got to be able to replicate it over and over again and make it become natural and easy and familiar. The word meditation, the actual translation of the word in Tibetan, means to become familiar with. So if you're becoming familiar with your old self and how you think and how you act and how you feel, wouldn't you agree then to know thyself? The more conscious you become of your unconscious self, you would never let any thought slip by your awareness in your waking day, would you? And if you sat there and you decided, who am I going to be when I open my eyes? How am I going to live this one day, one lifetime as a great being? How would greatness live today? How would they love? How present could I be? Am I open to the mystical? And you began to think about a new way of being. Wouldn't you agree then if you kept reviewing that every single day, you would fire and wire the circuits in your brain and it would begin to become familiar to you? Come on, you with me? And if you said, I'm going to teach my body emotionally what it feels like to be noble, to have honor, and I am not going to get up from this meditation until I am that person, and you began to make the inward experience as real as any outward experience, and the moment the inward experience became as real as an outward experience, the end product of an experience is called an emotion. And you begin to feel unlimited. You begin to feel like a genius. You begin to feel like a healer, whatever it is. And now you are signaling genes ahead of the environment. And if you can get up and maintain that modified state of mind and body your entire day, get ready, because something unusual is going to happen in your life. That is the law. And it's going to come in a way that you least expect. Why does it have to come in a way that you least expect? Because if you can expect it, it's nothing new. Truth? It's got to rock your world, it's got to catch you off guard, and it has to leave no doubt that what you did inside of you produced some result outside of you. And when you can correlate the feedback in your environment with the changes you made inside of you, you'll pay attention to what you did and you'll do it again. How many people are with me? And that's the quantum model of reality. And the quantum model of reality says your environment is an extension of your mind. So if you truly change your mind, there should be evidence in your life. Wouldn't you agree? And it should come in a way that is unexpected. And you should say, I never thought of that. Of course, that's called a new experience. But you can't do your meditation, and slip it in, with all the other things you have to do in your day, and be all spiritual and do your meditation and then get in the car and drive, hey, get out of my way. Judge your coat. You can't do that. That's like eating an organic, vegetarian, super healthy meal and then spending the rest of the day eating junk food. You have to maintain that modified state of mind and body, and your energy has to be higher than the highest person in your life. And you have to maintain that. That's what change is about. Now think about this. Think of a time in your life. Poke the person next to you, please. Give him a little poke. Think of a time in your life, geniuses. Think of a time in your life when you did something amazing. You did something incredible. You impressed yourself. You were your own hero. Think of a time in your life where you did something uncommon. What were some of the qualities that you had in order to do that? Would you say that you were passionate? Would you say that you had a vision? Would you say that you reviewed that vision every day? You were possessed by it? And nobody could talk you out of it? Didn't you wake up? It was uncomfortable, but you wanted that vision more than anything else. And you stopped doing the familiar things. You weren't going to let your energy drop into complaining or blaming or making excuses or feeling sorry for yourself. You were defined by a future instead of the past. Would you agree? And you ran into that future, and you hit obstacles, and you changed as you hit those obstacles, and you finally arrived at it. And it wasn't even about the receiving of whatever it was the joy of changing to get there. Wouldn't you agree? And you love yourself for that. Wouldn't you agree? Now, think of a time in your life when you wanted to do something, you didn't accomplish it. What happened there? What happened? You got a little emotional. You stubbed your toe 4 days ago and it ruined your whole mojo. Somebody did something to you. You had drama in your life. You got lazy and tired. You lost sight of the vision. And you were defined by your past because you were defined by your emotions. And emotions are the record of past experiences. So then, would you agree with me then, geniuses? If you're living by the same emotion every single day, it means nothing new is happening in your life. Is that true? And how many possibilities exist in the quantum field? A few? Unlimited? So for every experience, there should be an emotion that goes along with that. Would you agree? And could those emotions be like awe and the oh my God emotions? Emotions that you are so in love with life and in the moment, you wouldn't want to change a hair on anybody's head. You wouldn't want to judge anybody. You wouldn't want to change your past because everything in your past brought you to the present moment. And when you arrive at that present moment and you don't want to change your past, that's the moment your past turns to wisdom. How many people are with me? So then, all of this information this weekend for you to retreat from your life for a little bit of time is to remind you of what you already know. But how long can you sustain? How long can you walk into your life and be the example that you want everybody else to be? Would you agree then that if you were to really want to do this, that you would have to every morning remind yourself of who you no longer want to be, you know, your weaknesses and your unconscious behaviors and get clear on that, maybe even write them down and review them in your mind, and then begin to decide who you are going to be and say to yourself, I'm not getting up from this meditation until I'm a different person. And then you'd say, well, how much time should I take? But if you did that every day, who gets to benefit from that? I'm curious. Would you say you? And then you would say your family? And then you'd probably say your friends and workers or in your job, and then you'd say your community. Would you agree? So think about this. What if you just pretended to be somebody else? There was a research study done by Harvard University where they took a group of men that were in their 70s and 80s. You with me? And they brought them to a monastery north of Harvard. And these men retreated from their life for 5 days. 5 days. And the assignment for these men was that they were to pretend that they were 22 years younger. That's it. Now, they had pictures of Marilyn Monroe, and they had the Kennedys up there, you know, and they had you know, Mickey Mantle, and they had all this. They created the environment and the music and Tony Bennett, and they had all that going on, so it would remind them of being younger. You with me? Now, here's the fun part of the experiment. Before the men went to the monastery, they measured their height. They measured their weight. They measured their joint range of motion. They measured their finger lengths. They measured their toe lengths. And they measured their cognitive abilities. You got it? So these guys go, and for 5 days, they're pretending to be younger. They're laughing with their buddies, the whole bit. At the end of the experiment, the researcher, Ellen Langer, said, I was playing touch football with these men without their canes. They measured their finger lengths. Guess what happened? Longer. Measured their toe lengths. Guess what happened? They measured their height, their weight. They measured their cognitive abilities. 60 to 70% improved just by pretending to be someone else. Now, here's my question. Who are you pretending to be? Or better yet, who are you pretending not to be? So then those men, by the way, couldn't make their fingers longer. They could say, longer, 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 all day long, and that wouldn't change their finger length. Would you agree? They had to move into a state of being. Would you agree with that? They changed their body chemistry. They changed their mind. They changed a bunch of things that were happening behind the scenes of their awareness. So then, your body is a protein-producing machine. That's what your body is, a protein-producing machine. Now, in order for your body to make proteins, proteins are responsible for both the structure of your body and the physiological function. How many people are with me? Yeah. So proteins are about structure and function, yes? Yeah. This is about you. So in order for your body to make a protein, as in a cell, the cell has to have a gene that's activated or switched on. Does that make sense? So come on, give me a nod over there. So muscle cells make muscle proteins. It's called actin and myosin. Skin cells make skin proteins. They're called collagen and elastin. Stomach cells make stomach proteins. They're called enzymes. Your immune system makes immune proteins. They're called antibodies. Your thyroid makes thyroid proteins. It's called thyroxin. Your eyes make eye proteins called keratin. So every cell in your body makes a protein, except white blood cells, and red blood cells, and your body's a protein-producing machine. You got that? Come on. You got it?
Yes.
So in order for a gene to express a protein, there has to be some signal that happens in the cell. So then, would you begin to contemplate the idea that these men began to think differently than they typically did in their normal day? Yes? They began to fire the circuits in new sequences and new patterns and new combinations in their brain. The moment they created a new level of mind, the brain began to make these other chemicals called neuropeptides. Now, neuropeptides are chemical messengers that signal hormonal systems. So now, just by changing their state of being, all behind the scenes of their awareness, their body begins to accept new neuropeptides that are issued from the brain. These neuropeptides are different than the ones that they've been secreting for the last 22 years, because now they're producing a different level of mind. These neuropeptides then make their way to the cells of the body, and on the outside of the cells, they begin to activate new hormonal patterns. And now, as soon as the chemical hits the outside of the cell gets new information. And that new information then begins to signal the gene, and the gene begins to make a different protein. Now, what is synovial fluid? Synovial fluid is protein. So their body begins to change just by thought alone. Because the expression of the protein is the expression of health, and the expression of health is the expression of life. So you could say then your attitude is equal to the expression of health or expression of life in your body. Does that make sense? So then if you pretended to be somebody else just for the shortest period of time, you wouldn't even have to begin to think about the effects that it would produce. That's all happening in your autonomic nervous system. Does that make sense? So then, when you walk into your life after this event, you have really two paths. You have the path of the human emotional self that we all are used to living by. You know, we live by the hormones of stress, and the emotions of stress are anger and aggression and hostility and judgment and fear and anxiety and pain and suffering and guilt and shame and... They're all made by the hormonal systems that have to do with the stress response. And by the way, psychology calls that normal states of consciousness. Those are altered states of consciousness. Because the stress response, stress is when your body's knocked out of balance. The stress response is what your body innately does to return itself back to order. And so all organisms in nature can tolerate short-term stress. Zebra gets chased by the lion, the stress is over, it goes back to grazing. Human beings, whole different story. You know, we can turn on the stress response just by thought alone. We can think about some future worst-case scenario and select that future potential out of the infinite potentials. We obsess about that one potential because we had it happened where? In our past. So now we're bracing ourselves and preparing ourselves for that worst case scenario. And as we focus on that future scenario to the exclusion of everything else, the moment the thought becomes the experience in your brain, you knock your body out of physiological balance just by thought alone. And you can unfold the past bitter memory that's stamped in the recesses of your gray matter, and like magic, it comes to life. And as you attend to that to the exclusion of everything else, your body as the unconscious mind is believing that it's in that past experience all day long. So then, if we can turn on the stress response and we can't turn it off, now we're headed for disease. Because stress is an emergency situation. And no organism can tolerate living in emergency all the time. Because the more you live in an emergency response, and you are rushing all this energy out for some threat in your external environment, real or imagined, you have no energy in your internal environment for growth and repair. Does that make sense? And if I had the time, I could prove to you that every adult onset condition is created by the hormones of stress. It's a scientific fact. 9 out of 10 people that walk into a health clinic in the Western world walk in because of a stress-related disorder. Now, it's a scientific fact also that the hormones of stress dysregulate or downregulate genes to create disease. So think about this. You can turn on the stress response just by thought alone, and stress makes you sick, i.e., your thoughts can literally make you sick. That's the ultimate mind-body connection. Well, the question is, if your thoughts can make you sick, swinging out here, can your thoughts make you well? They can, yes? So then, those hormones of stress, your reaction in this one path in your life, when you react to someone or something in your life, and you're responding unconsciously, and you're producing those chemicals, and you're aggressive, or you're anxious, or you're judgmental, it's having an effect on your body because you're getting the same chemical signal on the outside of the cell, and you keep knocking on the same door over and over again, and you keep producing the same gene, activating the same protein, and you begin to wear that gene out. And that's called aging. That's called sickness because there's no new information coming from the environment. Does that make sense? Come on, give me a nod over there. Please poke the person next to you. Now, these hormones of stress, they're dangerous. You know why? Because they're very addictive. They give you a rush of adrenaline. It's the triple cappuccino syndrome. You get the rush of adrenaline. You get that rush of chemistry. And for a moment, your brain and body is awakened because it's perceiving that there's a predator somewhere out there. But what happens is all your pupils dilate, your salivary juices shut off, your digestive juices shut off, all the blood is sent to your extremities. You're ready to fight or run. Problem is there's no predator. It's only the boogeyman. So then, as that happens, there will always be a gap between the way things appear in your life and the way things really are. In other words, those hormones knock you out of balance. You perceive your life improperly. And if you act or react during that chemical change from those hormones, you'll always say what everybody says. I should have never said that. I should have never done that. I should have never thought that. I should have never sent that email. Because you're altered in some way. And now, what makes the whole thing complete is that if those hormones are addictive, we use the people and the problems and conditions in our life to reaffirm our addiction to that emotion. And so now, if the hormones are addictive and you can turn on the stress response just by thought alone, you become addicted to your own thoughts. Now, when that happens, that explains why it's so hard to change. So then, let's take a test, just for the fun of it, to see if you've ever been addicted to an emotion, okay? I want you to think of a time in your life where you were really angry. And if I came up to you and I said, hey, listen, I know you're really angry, but what I want you to do is just stop right now. What would you say? Don't say it. You would say, no, it's because of this person, this problem, this thing. And I say, yeah, I know, I get all that, but just stop. If you can't stop it, isn't that the definition of an addiction? Or how about if you have an Italian mother? This is hypothetical now. And she's walking around suffering. And you say, come on, Ma, stop suffering. Let's go for a walk. No, you don't understand. Wouldn't you agree that she's addicted to that suffering? And that there's nothing you're going to say to her that's going to change her suffering because no new information can come in that isn't equal to her suffering. Would you agree? So then, that path that you take, that one path when you walk back into your life, is the path of your humanity. It's the path of your human emotional self. Then there's the other path, and that is the path of divinity. That is the path that you walk. If you want to call it spiritual, I don't care what you call it, but it's the greatest expression of yourself. And you wouldn't drop to a lower level for any person, anything, or anyone, because you understood if you pretended to be someone else, or you were someone else in a new state of being every single day, that your environment would begin to show up equal to that state of being. Yes? So when Jesus pulled off his miracles, what did he say? Look, my mother would be so proud of me right now. He said, I was the Son of God today. And what happened when he couldn't pull his miracles off? What did he say? I was the Son of Man today. I was my human emotional self. So who do you want to be in your life when you walk out of here? And which path do you choose to take? Because there's so much conditioning and agreement that suffering is good and it's normal and all of the guilt is healthy for you. My God, it's a way you control people. When you free yourself from guilt, when you free yourself from unworthiness, when you free yourself from fear, when you free yourself from anxiety, when you free yourself from all of those limited emotions, your body is no longer living in the past. And the moment that happens, there's a liberation of energy, and we call that liberation of energy joy. And that is the natural state of being. So then, if you're living by emotions that keep you anchored to the past because of some past experiences, if you can overcome that emotion, a memory without the emotional charge is called wisdom. Now think about this. Your soul, what does your soul want? It wants to embrace all of those potentials that exist in the quantum field. How many of them are there again? Poke the person next to you and tell them. So if there's infinite potentials in the quantum field, and your soul wants to get about the business of creating some wonderful things, don't you know the soul is not ready to, and free to experience anything new if it's holding on to the emotion? Because the emotion is unresolved wisdom. Is that not true? But once you overcome that emotion, then now you're free to create something new. But if you're living by emotions from the past, and those emotions are driving the same thoughts, and those thoughts are driving the same emotions, and those emotions are driving the same thoughts, and sooner or later, how you think and how you feel is a state of being, then for the most part then, if you can't think greater than how you feel, or feelings have become the means of thinking, are you thinking in the future or are you thinking in the past? And if you're thinking in the past, and you may believe in the idea that your thoughts have something to do with your destiny, if you're thinking in the past, what do you keep creating more of? Quantum model's still working for you. Now, your body's the unconscious mind. It doesn't know the difference between an experience in your life that creates an emotion and an emotion that you can create internally. To the body, it's exactly the same. So if you're thinking and feeling within the same emotional state over time, your body's believing it's in the past. And if you condition your body to become the mind of that emotion, then your body literally is in the past. How many people understand that? So then, wouldn't it be a great effort for you to begin to change your state of being every day? And don't forget, your state of being is equal to your personality. And your personality, this is it, you ready? Your personality creates your personal reality. That's it. That's it. And your personality is made up of how you think, how you act, and how you feel. So the present personality who's sitting here today, called you, has created the present personal reality called your life. Yes? So then if you wanted to create a new personal reality, you would have to change the way you think, change the way you act, and change the way you feel. Yes? So most people try to create a new personal reality as the same personality, and it doesn't work. You literally have to become someone else. Now, I have a passion to observe people in transformation. And I don't care if I'm in Istanbul, or if I'm in Hong Kong, or up in Buenos Aires, or if I'm in the United States. Transformation looks the same on every culture. It looks exactly the same. And I know now that when people who are sick or people that have a disease that have embraced these concepts and healed themselves, I have read testimonial after testimonial of people in our workshops that have done it, some with genetic disorders that medical science told them they're going to live with for the rest of their life. They arrived at a point where they were so in love with themselves, so in love with life, feeling so whole and in such a state of gratitude that they could care less about their disease. And the moment they reached that state of being, guess what happened? It went away because the disease lived in the old personality, didn't have room in the new personality, belonged to the old personality. How many people are with me? Turn to the person next to you and give them a little piece of your mind there for a minute. All right. How you doing? You guys all right? You mad at me? So, it's cold. Can we make it warm for this? Look at him, don't look at me. Get that guy, don't get me. They're doing it right now. So, think about this. How many people in this audience may believe in the idea, I'm swinging out again, that your thoughts have some effect on your destiny, that your thoughts create your reality? How many people? Yes? Okay, well, here's the next question. How many people actually woke up this morning and consciously created a future? You know why the rest of you don't do it? Because you don't believe it's true. You don't believe it's true. You haven't made the connections in your brain. You haven't applied yourself. You haven't stepped out. If you knew that your thoughts created your life, knew it on a gut level, would you ever miss a day in creating your future? Never miss a day. And would you ever let any thought slip by your awareness that you don't want to experience? You would be tending the garden of the mind. Wouldn't you agree? So then, does your environment control your thinking, or does your thinking control your environment? In other words, does your personal reality create your personality, or does your personality create your personal reality? Because if you're not getting up and creating every day, your brain is organized to reflect everything you know in your life. Your brain is a reflection of your external environment. It is a record of the past. Your brain is an artifact. So then, if you wake up every morning and you go to the same place and you do the same thing and you see the same people at the exact same time and you get your coffee from your favorite mug and do all that stuff and you got your routine, you know, and you don't want the unknown to come because there's no room. It would be so inconvenient. Dancing with the Stars is on tonight. It's gonna. Yeah, but the alien ship is in the backyard and there's 9-foot beings that want to show you the beginning of time. Well, I don't eat carbohydrates. I'm gluten intolerant. I can't go. So, you think 60 to 70,000 thoughts in one day. Out of those 60 to 70,000 thoughts that you think in one day, 90% of those thoughts are the same thoughts as the day before. So, the same thoughts will always lead to the same choices. The same choices will always create the same behaviors. The same behaviors will produce the same experiences, and the same experiences will create the same emotions, and those same emotions will drive the same thoughts, and that's called the personality. How many people are with me? And your biology, your neurocircuitry, your chemistry, your hormonal state, and your genetic expression is equal to that state of being. You with me? Now, the hardest part about change is not making the same choice as you did the day before. That's the hardest part. And so, you'd have to agree with me that new thoughts should lead to new choices. And new choices should create new behaviors. And new behaviors should create new experiences. And new experiences should create new emotions. And those new emotions should inspire new thoughts. And that's called evolution. Would you agree with me also? So then, when you leave here, can you make a different choice? Now, here's the funny part about change. We call this in our advancing group crossing the river. Here's the old self, and then here's the new self, and there's a void between the two. In other words, you don't just skip into the new self. You have to cross the river. And don't you know that the moment you're no longer thinking the same thoughts or making the same choices that create the same behaviors, that produce the same experiences, for that emotion that you're looking for to reaffirm your identity, you look forward to that emotion, anticipated over time. Don't you know, the moment you stop doing that, you're no longer allowing your body to be the mind, you're breaking the habit, and you step into that river. And the moment you step into that river of change, it feels unfamiliar. It feels uncomfortable. You are in the unknown. And most people, the moment they step in there, they look to see, no one else is changing. Am I the only one doing this? And the moment they step in that river and they feel that discomfort, the body as the mind starts sending signals back to the brain. You start to hear these thoughts in your head. You know, the thoughts like, oh, you're too old, you'll never change. You know, you're too much like your mother. Now look at you, you're a failure. And all of that, this doesn't feel right, all of that to unseat you so that the body can return back to its familiar state. And people don't even know, if 95% of who you are is this unconscious set of programs, subconsciously, you don't even know that you judge. You may not even know that you feel guilty because it feels right, feels like you. And so the body then starts sending signals back to the brain. And you start to hear that chatter in your head. And those thoughts then that are familiar cause you to make the same choice. That leads to the same behavior that creates the same experience, that produces the same emotion. That emotion is what you're looking for, that you're addicted to. And then you say, oh, this feels right. No, it feels familiar. But nobody's told us that crossing that river is the neurological, biological, hormonal, addictive, genetic death of the old self. Is the old self dying? Now, you can't white-knuckle it across this river. Because people say to me, well, I don't know, how am I going to, I can't predict my future. And I always say, well, the best way to predict your future is to create it. Not from the known, but from the unknown. You are in a perfect place to create from. Wouldn't you agree? So now you have a direction as you cross the river. If you don't, and you're not thinking about new ways of being, you'll circle right back to the familiar shore, and you'll say, this feels right. And people do that all the time. And then they feel like a failure, and then they're addicted to failure. You get the idea? So then, if you wake up every morning and you're not creating a new state of being and you're not being defined by a future instead of your past, then you're just left with the old hardware in your brain. And as you get up and you shut the alarm clock off and you do the same thing as you did the day before, the exact same thing, you drive to work the same route, you see the same people that push the same emotional buttons that you get to judge back there, and then, you know, you hurry up and do the things that you've memorized and can do so well, we could say that it's your external environment, everything in your same familiar life that's turning on different circuits in your brain, causing you to think equal to everything that you know. And as long as you're thinking equal to everything you know, everything that's familiar in your environment, and your environment is controlling how you're thinking and feeling, then we could say then, you're thinking equal to your environment, and it's all the same, what are you creating more of? You're reinforcing the same external environment, because your quantum mind is equal to it. So then, to change, then, is to be greater than your environment, to be greater than the conditions in your life, to be greater than the circumstances in your world. And every great person in history knew this. They weren't defined by the present past reality. Whether it was Martin Luther King or William Wallace or Joan of Arc or the Bright Brothers, whoever it was, they were defined by a future, and no one could really see that future like they could. But their job was to inspire people and change their resting state, emotionally give them a little juice so they could see a new landscape and they could see that possibility. And they were so committed to that future that they began to live as if that future reality was happening in the present moment. They were uncompromising to their vision. Would you agree? So here's the question. Can you believe in a future that you can't see or experience with your senses yet? but you've thought about enough times in your mind that your brain is literally changed to look like the experience has happened? Neuroplasticity and the model of mind says it's absolutely possible. And can you fall in love with the future potential that exists in the quantum field to such a degree that you emotionally embrace that future and your body as the unconscious mind begins to believe it's in that future in the present moment, and you begin to condition it to a new mind and signal new genes in new ways so that your body begins to physically change to look like the experience has happened? Epigenetics says it's absolutely possible. So if your brain and body have physical evidence to look like the experience has already happened, then your brain and body are no longer attached to the past, a record of the past, but now, in fact, a map to the future. And to live by that law is to live by the quantum law. You are ahead of your time. So then, that's the model of transformation. And your The new science gives us permission to do the uncommon. But you know, most people, they'll say, what? I'm going to give thanks for this event before it's taken place? No, my new lover has to show up first before I'm happy. Then I'll be happy. I'll give thanks when my wealth finally comes. That's the old model of reality. That's Newtonian physics, cause and effect. Something outside of you changes something inside of you, and if you like it or dislike it, you pay attention to whatever caused it. Cause and effect. Old model of reality. The quantum model of reality is about causing an effect. It's about changing your state of being and marrying a clear intention with an elevated emotion. And when you do that, your body begins to change to look like the experience has happened. So then, if you're every single day creating from a state of gratitude, what is the emotional signature of gratitude? What does gratitude mean? It means it already happened. The event has already occurred. Don't you give thanks when it happens? Or it's happening to you? So when we were doing our workshops and we started seeing all these people healing from all these different conditions, they were in a state of gratitude, and their body believed it was happening to them in the present moment, because what they were seeing in their mind married with that emotion was the experience. And it rewrote their biology in 45 minutes. You with me? So then, gratitude then means the event has already happened. And when people say, well, you know, okay, I'll try that out. And if you're a materialist and you're defining reality with your senses, because the hormones of stress do that, you know, you're plugged into the external environment, then the materialist would say, I can't do that. And there's like kind of a switch in our brain. We have to wait for physical evidence. But if you keep applying yourself, keep applying yourself, and you're able to marry those two ingredients, and then get up from your meditation as if your prayers are already answered. We don't pray at all to have our prayers answered. We get up as if they're already answered, and we walk through our life as if it's already done. How many people are with me? Now, when you, and then you allow a greater intelligence to organize it in a way that's wonderful for you. Isn't that nice? The great parent takes care of it. Yes? So if you go to a dinner, right? You go to a restaurant, and you place your order for something. When you place that order, do you get up and hassle the waiter, like, where's my order? Did you make my... Or do you go in the kitchen and hassle the cooks? You place the order and you allow it to come to you. Would you agree? So one of the greatest elements of my personal change was learning how to get out of the way. Learning how to get out of the way, which means that the moment you create a future and you get in your own way because you're analyzing when it's going to happen or where it's going to happen, you just return back to the old self. The new self would never think that way. They're too busy being it. How many people understand? Yeah. Did that land for you? Yeah. Didn't land for you. If you get up from your meditation and you start thinking about, where's my wealth? Where's my job? You know, you start doing that. What did you just do? Just return back to the old self. The old self is thinking. The new self is in a state of being. They're not analyzing because they're beyond it. Does that make sense? So then, if your environment is controlling how you think and feel, and you can't be greater than your environment, then you'll act and react in very predictable ways. Would you agree? And if you keep firing the same thoughts 60 to 70,000 times in one day, same thoughts as yesterday, nerve cells that fire together, so you begin to hardwire your brain into a very finite signature. It's a very finite landscape. It's the same signature because you're firing the same sequences, patterns, and combinations every single day because you're reproducing the same level of mind. And all of a sudden, you get this little box in your brain. It's not a box, but it's the most commonly fired, neurologically wired set of thoughts and behaviors. Does that make sense? So then, when you decide to change, and you understand that you are addicted to an emotion, would you agree then that the moment you break an addiction to anything, oh my God, the body starts to crave exactly what you just decided 10 minutes ago that you were emphatic about? Yes? You got to be able to be aware of that all the time. But if you make the same choice, like, I'm going to lose weight and I'm going to be healthy, and you make this declaration, and then, you know, 20 minutes later, you're on the couch with it. Popcorn and the ice cream. What the hell? What happened? You went unconscious. Yes? So then, to break that emotional addiction means that you have to go through that craving process. Now, think about this. Let's just suppose that you were addicted to sugar. I don't know. I'm making this up. Or coffee. I don't care. Whatever it is. You got to have it, you know? And you know, remember, addiction is when the body's the mind. And I came over and I just made my double dark chocolate brownies that are world-renowned in my mind, of course. And I said, hey, we're having some brownies. I fling them on the table. What do you think is going to happen the moment you see those brownies? Two things. First thing, your stomach will start to gurgle. You start drooling on your chin. And then the second thing you start to hear the voices in your head, oh, come on. Everybody else is eating the chocolate. Why don't you eat it? You could start tomorrow. Tomorrow's a better day. Come on. This is self-love. This is self-love. And if you have one bite of that chocolate, you're going to eat the whole thing, right? So then, think about this. If you broke the addiction to chocolate or to sugar or coffee or whatever it is, and I slid my brownies in front of you, and you weren't addicted to those brownies, could you look at them and eat them and not eat them? There'd be no tug, no charge, yes? But you're conditioned, or we're conditioned in our environment. Think about it. Pavlov gets his dog, straps him to the table, rings a bell, and feeds him a meal. Keeps ringing the bell, feeding the meal. In time, he's able to ring the bell without the food, and they salivate autonomically, automatically, subconsciously, physiologically change, and their conscious mind really can't control it. Does that make sense? So if you're addicted to an emotion, and you're using a person or a condition in your life to reaffirm that addiction, don't you know that if you haven't overcome that emotion, the moment you return back into your life, just like Pavlov's dog or just like the chocolate cake, you are going to subconsciously, unconsciously, physiologically, chemically return back to the old state of being? How many people understand? Break the addiction to the emotion and you can walk in your past, present reality and you no longer knee-jerk unconsciously again. How many people are with me? Does that make sense to you? So then as you begin to sit in your meditation and your body is raging because it doesn't want to sit still, but you trained it that way. It's not like someone did that to you. And it's impatient or it's frustrated or it's judgmental. And your body is, as the mind is trying to unseat you. Most people get up and they turn on the computer, or they start texting. They want to distract themselves from that feeling that's always been there. But looking at that feeling, as the body begins to try to unseat you, the master is back on the throne. But the body's saying what? Where you been? I've been suffering for the last 25 years because you trained me that way. As a matter of fact, I don't even need you any longer. I can do this without you. Oh, and by the way, you think you're making all the choices consciously? I got news for you. You're not making any of those choices. I'm influencing all those choices for your for that emotion. You with me? Now you're sitting down and you're tempering the animal. You are tempering the servant. And it is frustrated and it's angry and it's impatient because that's who you are. That's who we are. And when your body begins to buck and kick like an unbridled stallion, what are you going to do? Are you going to allow it to be the mind? Or are you going to say, that's all you got? That's your best? That's it? I'm going to sit here and I'm going to wait till you're done. And I'm going to recondition you to a new mind. And you're going to be so happy that you're happy. Now, isn't that greatness? Don't you love being your own hero? Don't you see those movies just to remind you that you're your hero in your life? So if you keep overcoming and overcoming and overcoming, sooner or later you'll become. Would you agree? And so, as you sit with that body as the mind, and you begin to observe its urges and its drives and its propensities and the voices that are happening behind the scenes of your awareness, and now you're aware of them, now you're conscious of them, now, all of a sudden, you're like Gandalf on the bridge. You may not pass today. That's greatness. And when you overcome some aspect of yourself, you feel more whole. You are more in love with yourself. You're more tolerant and patient with others. And most importantly, you're free. And when you get up and have respect for yourself and everybody else, you could walk back into your life and the person that betrayed you, talks poorly about you, you could sit and square off with them and love them because you're no longer emotionally connected to them any longer. You're somebody else. How many people understand? So then if you're taking care of your fear and anxiety and I'm taking care of my impatience and hostility and someone else is taking care of their judgment and worry, and everybody's taking care of themselves, wouldn't you agree then all of a sudden we got a community that's beginning to emerge? Yes? You ever see those birds, you know, they all fly the same way, and the fish that all do that? If you study that phenomenon in biology, you would think that there's a leader, you know, showing like, and everybody's following the leader. Turns out, it's not a top-down phenomenon. It's actually a bottom-up phenomenon. In other words, there's no leader. Everybody is leading. And that concept in biology is called emergence. So you and I have this stigma in our brains. You can't lead too much in your life with too much passion because all the leaders, what happened to them? They got it. I don't care who, Martin Luther King, William Wallace, Kennedy, John Lennon, Jesus, they all got it. Can't be, you can't lead with too much passion because subconsciously you think you're going to be assassinated in some way. But here's the question. What if everybody's leading? That's the prophecy of a new consciousness. That is the Christ consciousness that's emerging because you can't take out everybody. And as that culture emerges, it consumes the other culture. And that is called true transformation. That's my passion. That's what I see when I close my eyes to meditate. That's why I do this, because I believe in a better world. I believe in it. And in an age right now where information is so readily available, ignorance is a choice. And the models that have currently existed, I don't care which one, the political model, the economic model, the religious model, the educational model, the medical model, all the models, the environment, they're all breaking down because something new has to come out of it. And it cannot be the same. And so, how do you become supernatural? Don't you know you have to do things that are unnatural? You know, when everybody else is in fear, you have to show courage. When everybody else is in lack and there's not enough, you have to give. When everybody else is judging, and hostile. You have to show compassion and love. And when everybody's rushing to race to the top, you have to show peace and presence. And if you keep doing that enough times, what was once unnatural becomes natural, and you become supernatural. Would you agree?
Yes.
And so, all of this information is an opportunity for you to embody it completely. And I know from doing this since before 1999, the hardest part of all of this, I'm telling you, I know, is making the time to do it. And when you trade the thought, that thought is more real than anything else, for something less than that, it's because you chose an emotion that you're addicted to. And you walk the path of the human instead of the divine. How many people are with me?
Yes.
Now, how much time do I have? Am I done?
You're done.
Oh, I have 10 minutes. Okay, so I have 10 minutes. So, when you walk back into your life, who do you want to be? And you're only limited by the knowledge you learn and the experiences that you have. People around the world are doing amazing things. I was telling the group on Friday in a workshop that I was in Barcelona just a little ways back, and this woman hands me a note as I'm walking off the stage, and I open this note up and I read it. And it was such a profound story, I had her come up on the stage and tell the story. She's mother living in Amsterdam, great life, husband, you know, successful, and all of a sudden, her husband disappears and he leaves. He says, I'm going to go to the store. She says, okay. He goes to the tallest building in Amsterdam and jumps off the building, commits suicide. Now, strong emotional response. She reacts emotionally. She's angry at him. She's frustrated. She's saddened. She's victimized. She goes through all these emotions, and she can't stop the emotions because she's branded by the experience, and every time she thinks about the experience, she's producing the same chemistry in her brain and body as if the event is happening, and her body's reliving the experience hundreds of times in one day and keeps signaling the same gene over and over again, and she talks about it, and she works herself up into the same emotional state, and she's becoming defined by her past, the emotions are creating a mood, the mood's turning into a temperament, and it finally becomes part of her personality. You with me? So, those hormones of stress begin to signal the gene, and next thing you know, within 2 months, she can't walk. She can't get out of bed. I mean, the doctors couldn't even diagnose, they called it neuritis. But she had pain everywhere in her body to the point that it crippled her. Now she lost her husband. I know this sounds like a country western song. She got no job, she got no money, no one to take care of her kids, and her mother's supporting her. Now, the stress of that now compounds the experience, and the next thing you know, within 2 months, she develops these ulcerations, large ulcerations, all inside of her mouth, down her esophagus, in her vagina, and her anus. Now she's really in pain. Now she's now reaffirming her pain because she's created the pain. You with me? Then it progresses 2 months later and she develops esophageal cancer. Now, she didn't tell anybody about this except her mother. She didn't tell her kids or anything. And she comes to one of our workshops in Amsterdam. She begins to understand that she could signal new genes in new ways. And she was simple enough to say, if I turn the gene on, I could turn it off. Does that make sense? And one time in my life, the gene was expressed for health, and now the gene isn't expressed, so I should be able to upregulate these genes. It made sense to her. So she came to the workshop. She didn't tell anybody. She practiced her meditation every day. Now, let me ask you a question. Were there days where she didn't want to do it?
Yes.
There was days she didn't feel good?
Yes.
Was there days she was in a lot of pain?
Yes.
Were there days where she was discouraged?
Yes.
Were there days that she couldn't forgive herself?
Yes.
You know what? She did it anyway. And here's the deal she made with herself. I am not getting up from my meditation until I am in love with life. That was her commitment. Now that's greatness, because you got to turn that battleship around. She became her own hero. And she came to an advanced progressive workshop in New York, and it was in Norwalk, Connecticut, outside in the country, this beautiful monastery. And in my progressive workshops, I push people past where they normally stop. I want them to come up against their limitations. I want them, because on the other side of it is freedom. And I pushed that group because they were a great group. And we were in and out of meditation all day long, all day long, all day long. for 3 days, and she broke through. And she had a greater conviction and a greater will, and she went back, and for the rest of the year, every single day, she created from the state of being in love with life. And within a very short amount of time, all the pain in her body went away, all the lesions in her mouth and her vagina and her anus disappeared, and the esophageal cancer went away. Only thing that was left was a little scar from where the cancer was. Now, she stood up on that stage, and she said, "My disease was my greatest teacher about me." Because she could have been defined by her past, and she could have said, "That's who I am, because I'm this way because my husband jumped off a building." But she said, "I want to be defined by a future." And she said, "I have no diseases, I got my job back, I got a new husband, woohoo!" And just in time when her, you know what, healed. So she was having a great time. I'm going to get thrown out of here. Now, don't you know how valuable she is to me? She is invaluable to me. Because if you see someone dance the merengue well, you'll dance the merengue better. If you see someone lead with compassion in your life, you'll lead with compassion better. If you see someone stand up on the stage and talk about turning around a disease that the doctors told her she would have for the rest of her life, you will believe in possibility and you'll begin to believe in yourself. Will you not? And I have talked to CEOs of companies. I've talked to prison inmates. I've talked to mothers, single mothers of three. I've talked to janitors in the schoolhouse. And everybody secretly believes in themselves. They secretly believe in possibility. They secretly believe in themselves and their own greatness. And so then, stepping out into the unknown seems so dangerous. Because if you're living by the hormones of stress, the unknown is danger. Because if there's a predator, better chances of survival to run from the unknown than to embrace it. But if you overcome yourself, you overcome those survival emotions, the unknown becomes an adventure. And you're no longer the hobbit eating bacon and eggs, living in the Shire. You left, and you went on an adventure. So then, great time in history to be alive, wouldn't you agree? Great time in history to demonstrate greatness. And it's not enough to be willing to die for the truth. This is a time in history where we have to live for the truth. And if you have the simplest passion to change something about yourself and step into the unknown, the smallest degree, the smallest effort produces some result. And if you're willing to step out into that unknown and lead by example in your life, don't you know that everybody else, because of mirror neurons, is going to do the same? And so, if you see your life, then, as your initiation, as your greatest challenge, and we're no longer victims to our life, would you agree? We're the creators of it. And it's no longer that our personality is creating our personal reality is creating our personality. It's now that our personality is producing some effect on your personal reality. And when you have that magic going, when you're in your mojo zone, and you're happy just because you're in love with life, that woman said to me, "I am so in love with my life." She walked off the stage with me on the break, and she said, "I'm so in love with my life." And I said, "What are you talking about? You created every single day from the state of being in love with your life. Of course you're going to be in love with your life." Does that make sense? So who do you want to be the rest of the day? Remember those men that were 22 years younger? Do you want to be the healer? You want to be the sage? You want to be the mystic? You want to be the patient parent? You want to be the genius? You want to be the unlimited mind? Who do you want to be? Because if you're able to maintain a modified state of mind and body and move into a new state of being, which is how you think and feel, and you're able to sustain that state of being, there will be biological effects that begin to happen behind the scenes of your awareness. So in closing, what is our purpose in life? I think our purpose in life is to be beautiful, or be popular, or be successful, or wealthy, or accumulate things. That's conditioning. Our purpose in life is to begin to remove those layers, those veils, those blocks, those emotions, those habits that block the flow of the divine in us. And when we begin to remove those layers, that intelligence, that's a loving intelligence, an intelligent love, begins to leak out of us. It begins to consume us. Its nature becomes our nature. Its mind becomes our mind. Its love for life becomes our love for life. Its will becomes our will. And when we truly get to that point where that intelligence is leaking out of us, and we are no longer seduced by anything outside of us because we find it within us, that's the beginnings of unconditional love. Because no condition out there you would want to trade for this feeling within you. Does that make sense? And so then, when you begin to break the chains of your own limitations, truly, and you're satisfied with yourself, you are open to expecting the unexpected, you're liberated, you're seeing possibilities, seeing a whole new landscape that you never saw before because you're no longer looking at your life through the lens of the past. Don't you know when you truly break free, there's only one thing you want to do when that happens? And that's give. You say, I feel so amazing. I want everybody to feel the way I feel. Here, take this. Now imagine a world where everybody was giving instead of taking. So then I charge you in your life to try it out. To try it out in the smallest or the largest of ways. And to make time for your precious self every day. And to work with your body and conditioning it to a new mind. And to never stop learning and never stop believing in possibility. And if by chance you happen to do the uncommon, send me an email. Thanks for listening.